This is True Love's First Kiss, a Star Trek reboot, Disney's Enchanted fusion fic, written by Kay Tree, read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG for mild language. Pairings are Kirk McCoy and Spock Uhura. Author's note. I know this may come as a shock, but I am not, amazing as it may seem, Gene Roddenberry, J.J. Abrams, Paramount, or Bad Robot. Just so you know. Thanks to Dramapunk for San Francisco geography help, and to Suddenly Slept for betaing. Reader's note. All musical interludes come from Disney's Enchanted motion picture soundtrack, original score composed and produced by Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz. Check it out to hear the full-length songs. They're really good. Once upon a time, in a land far, far away, there lived a woodsman named Jim, who dreamed of true love's first kiss. "I saw this in a window on my way to pick you up," Leonard tells Joe. His daughter is 6, but she looks bigger in her Taekwondo outfit, he thinks proudly. "I thought you'd like it." Joe looks at the book dubiously. "Important women of our time," the cover proclaims helpfully. Joe chews on her bottom lip. It's her thinking face. "You don't like it." Leonard works to keep his voice even, to not let his disappointment show. "No, no," Joe says hastily. "It's okay." "But it's great, though, see?" Leonard puts his arm around her shoulders, flipping through pages helpfully. "See, it's got all these great and important people in here, women who did awesome things. Look, there's Sandra Day O'Connor. She was a famous lawyer and a justice..." "Mom's a famous lawyer, and she left us," Joe says. Leonard winces. "It wasn't because she was a lawyer." He feels exhausted then, sinking into the faux leather seat of the cab. "It's just... it's complicated, sweetie." Joe sighs. "I know." She pauses. "I'd really like a book of fairy tales. Miss Gretchen read us the one about Sleeping Beauty..." "No, no, look. Sleeping Beauty kept waiting for her one true love and then spent her whole life cleaning house after a bunch of stinky dwarves. That's Snow White, Dad. And then she had to spin straw into gold because her husband was too lazy to get a real job. That's Rapunzel, and that's not what happened. And then she turned into foam because she had no soul." Joe looks mutinous when he finishes his tirade. "I just want you to have a good role model, sweetie," he continues, far more lamely than he would like. "You should know that you can be whatever you'd like. Daddy!" Joe's looking past him, out the window, her expression one of astonishment and fear. "That man's about to fall!" Leonard turns to look. They're at a red light, and, to his horror, Joe has her seatbelt undone in a heartbeat and is running outside. "Honey, stop!" He's out of the car in a second, following her. They're by an old strip mall. This is where the Medieval Times restaurant used to be before it went under. Apparently Merlin had an embezzlement scheme going on. The castle facade is worn and dingy, and the man in a bright blue puffy-sleeved shirt and the tightest leather pants Leonard has ever seen is clinging to a parapet, yelling into the rain. "Help him, Daddy!" Joe stares up. The man appears to be addressing the billboard that has a faded King Arthur on it. "Please, Your Majesty, just a moment of your time!" The plaster parapet collapses under the man's weight, and he's falling. Leonard scoots Joe out of the way, just in time for the strange man to fall on him instead. "Oof! Ow! Oh, my goodness! Daddy? My back!" He's nose to nose with the stranger. Leonard looks up into the brightest blue eyes he's ever seen outside of a Disney cartoon. "Sorry," the man says sheepishly. "I appear to have had an accident. Are you quite all right?" "My back," Leonard repeats. His voice comes out almost as a squeak, because it seems for a second that the stranger's body burns where it touches his. Just for a second, and then he's off him. "I'm too old for this," he mutters, and then the man is pulling him to his feet with ease. He notices the warmth of the hands, the calloused fingertips, and then he's staring into those amazing eyes again. "Are you a prince?" Joe asks the man uncertainly. He looks like an escapee from the Renaissance Fair, Leonard thinks, with the puffy shirt and the leather pants. He also has a leather vest on and tall leather boots. His hair is short and dark, and he may well be one of the most beautiful men that Leonard has ever seen. The stranger makes a short bow to Joe. "Oh, no," he says. "I'm a woodsman. I'm going to marry a prince, though. His name is Spock. My name is Jim. What's yours?" "Joe," Joe says, still staring. Her eyes are huge with astonishment and delight. "A real prince?" "Oh, yes," Jim assures her. "He has a white horse and a sword and everything. He saved me from a troll, you see," he tells Leonard helpfully. "You haven't seen him by chance, have you? I fell down a wishing well and I came out a hole in the street and it's all been ever so strange." "Uh-huh." Leonard half listens as the man continues to babble, checking him for signs of concussion. "You have very long hair," Jim tells Joe, who listens avidly to every word. "I've never seen hair that long before." "How many fingers am I holding up?" Leonard asks. "My hair's perfectly normal," Joe says, affronted. "Two?" Jim answers Leonard's question uncertainly. "This isn't a trick question, is it? I'm not good with riddles. And I never said your hair wasn't normal," he adds to Joe, "just that I'd never seen hair that long before. You're an odd little boy, you know that?" Joe giggles at that. "I'm not a boy, I'm a girl," she says. "Really?" Jim drops to a crouch so that he and Joe are at eye level. Leonard glares into space for a second. Jim is grinning in wonder. "Oh, my stars," he says. "I've never seen a girl before." Joe is laughing, and Leonard sighs. "Just great," he mutters. "High as a kite." He sighs, already calling the hospital. Cases like this are Jeff's specialty. Thank God their cab is still waiting for them. "You should come home with us," Joe says. Leonard whirls around, jaw dropping as Jim answers. His phone snaps shut as he stares, call terminated. "Oh, that would be ever so kind of you. I had quite despaired of finding a hollow tree for the night. Now, have you by chance seen my friend Pike? He's a chipmunk." Jim keeps up a running commentary through the cab ride home to their apartment in North Beach. Leonard's going to get the man a hotel for the night or something, anything, just for him to shut up and get out of his hair. But Joe is hanging on his every word, so if he can get her home and safely in bed, he can get this guy on his way. "And the troll was so very large, you see," Jim is saying, "and my axe was stuck in a tree, so of course I had to hurry and climb up, up and up instead. And that was when Spock arrived. He has a lovely baritone," he concludes with a happy sigh. "A baritone?" Joe echoes as they get out of the car.
"That'll be $30, says the cabbie.
"Well, he is an elf," Jim continues. "They sing like you wouldn't believe."
"$30? You said $15.
Leonard glares at the cabbie, rummaging in his wallet while simultaneously keeping an eye on Jim and Joe nearby. "An elf?" Joe gasps.
"Oh, for crying out loud." That was before the extra passenger, and then the three of you getting my cab all wet.
Please, let me, Jim says, ignoring them. He holds out a large coin to the cabbie. It looks heavy, the face of it worn. It's solid gold.
Both Leonard and the cabbie stare at it, struck dumb.
Works for me, the cabbie says, making a grab for it, but Leonard thrusts the 3 tens into his hand first.
Have a nice night,
Leonard growls at the man, who grunts in irritation before driving off. Put that away, he hisses at Jim. Do you want to get robbed? Jesus Christ!
Ooh, Joe murmurs.
You're going to have to pay the swear box.
Sorry, darling, Leonard says.
Jim licks his lips thoughtfully, looking puzzled. The unconsciously sensual gesture rattles him, so he jerks his head to the entryway pointedly.
Come on, let's go.
Was that real gold? Joanna wants to know as they get on the elevator.
It's all I have, Jim says. I live in the forest and have little need for money. Sulu gave it to me before I went to the palace.
Oh, my!
Jim jumps in startlement as the elevator moves, hands splayed flat against the back of it in shock.
What's happening?
It's just taking us to our floor, Leonard explains tiredly. We're on 8. Come on.
The elevator chimes as the door opens for them.
You're a very powerful wizard, Jim says in admiration as they step out into the hallway.
Daddy's not a wizard, Joe giggles. He's a doctor.
Damn right,
Leonard mutters as he unlocks the door to their apartment.
Daddy!
Sorry, sweetie. He drops a handful of pocket change into the swear box, which is near the entrance for just such an occasion. The coins tinkle quietly. At this rate, he's already started planning on using the large glass jar as a startup for her college fund. Sighing, he removes his duster to hang it on the coat rack. Jim is helping Joe with her raincoat, too.
A man always helps a lady with her coat, he explains, when he catches Leonard's glare.
Pike taught me this. He hangs the coat up carefully before stepping back. He's drenched to the skin himself, the puffy sleeves of his shirt stuck to his strong-looking arms, beads of water pooling in splashes along the leather of his vest and pants. In the light, Leonard can now see that Jim's hair is a dark blonde, and his eyes are an even brighter blue than they had first appeared. He looks like he's in his early 20s, maybe, and, for all that, strangely innocent. Most men wandering around San Francisco in skin-tight leather just don't have that shy, cheerful look about them.
What? He asks, lips quirking upward in another brilliant smile.
Leonard realizes he's been staring. He blinks, shaking his head.
Nothing. Sorry. Tired. I'm sorry,
he says again, and mentally kicks himself for being an idiot. He turns to Joe.
Go get ready for bed, he tells her. Nyota's taking you to school tomorrow.
Okay, Joe mutters, stalking to her room obediently. Halfway down the hall, she turns back.
But I want Jim to tell me a bedtime story when I get back.
Jim gives her a polite little bow.
Delighted, my lady,
he says, with another grin, his eyes partially shut into blue triangles with amusement. When he hears the reassuring click of Joe's door shutting, Leonard turns to the other man, taking care to keep his voice low so they won't be heard.
Okay, what do you need? Do you have someone you can call to come get you?
What? Jim looks confused and growing more so, but Leonard continues anyway.
Do you need money? I've got a little bit left in my wallet, but if you use it on drugs, I swear...
Huh? Jim's forehead is wrinkled in confusion.
I don't understand.
The door clicks as Jo runs back to them, attired in her beloved Optimus Prime pajamas. She skids to a stop, glaring at them both.
Dad, she says, like she's 6 going on 32. You've left our guest in his wet things? He's going to get pneumonia and die, and it's going to be all your fault.
Leonard rolls his eyes as Jim assures her.
I've never been sick a day in my life, my lady.
He gives up when he sees Joe flush with pleasure. The guy seems harmless enough.
Come with me, he mutters.
He takes Jim to his room, pulls out an old t-shirt and a pair of jeans for him.
Bathroom's in there, he gestures, and then pulls out his own pajamas.
He turns around, just as Jin pulls the jeans up over his hips, examining the fly curiously. Jim is not wearing any underwear, and...
Leonard refrains from further thought.
The bathroom was in there, I said.
The other man cocks his head to the side, quizzical.
What's a bathroom?
He asks.
Leonard thinks he should be worried about having this odd stranger in his home, but somehow he's not. He's annoyed and bewildered and more than a bit confused, particularly with the roundabout story he chooses to tell Joe, but he's not worried. And so I said to Red, I don't believe you. I've gone hunting with Wolf plenty of times, and he just isn't interested in people that way. He likes fish, trust me. Well, as you can imagine, Red was less than pleased about that.
Wait, Joe interrupts him.
You said you'd never seen a girl before, but if you've met Red Riding Hood...
Leonard represses a snort of laughter, beaming at his little girl. God, she was quick and so damn smart. Jim's eyes widen comically.
Red's not a girl, he says. Whoever said he was?
Everyone ever? Joe answers.
Are you saying Red Riding Hood is a boy?
Jim looks awkward.
I wouldn't say that, either.
Okay, Leonard interrupts hastily. Time for bed. Joe, don't repeat any of this to Miss Gretchen. You're sleeping in my room tonight, he adds. Now, say goodnight, sweetie.
To both men's surprise, Joe flings her arms around Jim, hugging him tightly.
Goodnight, Jim, she says, before racing to Leonard's room. They both stare after her in bemusement, and then she peeks her head around the corner.
Will I get to meet Prince Spock?
I hope so, Jim answers. He grins at the thought of the other man, then bows to the little girl once more.
Sweet sleep, Lady Joanna.
She turns pink at that, giggles, and runs off. They've already made the couch up for the man, so Leonard just stands, nodding at him awkwardly. He opens and closes his mouth, not sure what to say, and then Jim grins up at him.
You have sweet sleep too, friend Leonard, he says in that odd, formal way of his.
He lies back on the couch trustingly, his shirt rocking upwards to show off a bit of flat stomach.
Yeah... Leonard answers, drawing out the word uncertainly as he tries not to stare.
Thanks. You too. Shaking his head, trying to ignore a familiar but half-forgotten feeling he can't quite bring himself to name, he shuts off the light. Jo is curled up in bed, holding her beloved toy Mr. Bear under her chin.
Jim's a funny man, isn't he, Daddy?
That's one way to put it, sweetheart, he says as he lies down. She cuddles close, putting Mr. Bear on his stomach. He kisses her forehead and quickly drifts off to sleep. Leonard wakes up in the morning to Joe persistently pulling at his arm.
Wake up! Wake up!
He mumbles. He's not a morning person.
Dad!
Joe is whining, eager.
For a panicky moment, Leonard fears that it is Christmas and that he is somehow forgotten. Something smells good! It does, too. The scent of frying bacon and pancakes wafts through the apartment. Leonard is profoundly confused, particularly since he knows that the only breakfast food in his household consists of cold cereal and boxed muffins from the bakery down the street. I think Jim is cooking, Joe says, adding pointedly, I'm hungry. Memories of the night before flood his mind. The odd, beautiful man, the heavy rain. Leonard jumps up, wordless with confusion and curiosity. He opens the bedroom door, stepping out into the short hallway. Can you hand me that cup? Thanks. Leonard isn't sure who Jim is talking to, and he prepares himself uncertainly for some kind of confrontation. And then again, maybe the kid called one of his friends and he'll be gone soon. Nonetheless, he whispers to Joe, Go back to my room, sweetie. Stay quiet, just in case. Dad? Do as I say. She flinches in surprise, but does as he says. He grabs his old baseball bat from the umbrella stand by the still-locked door, because, really, where do you keep your baseball bats? And then steps into the kitchen. A row of pigeons sit along the sill of the open window, regarding Jim with interest as he appears to instruct them in the art of making pancakes. One of them even has its head cocked quizzically as it observes Jim adding batter to the hot pan. There's a trick to getting them in nice even circles, Jim tells the bird, who makes a low sound of interest in its throat. Yeah, it's all in the wrist. He demonstrates the gesture for the animal, and Leonard relaxes a little, admiring those graceful long-fingered hands. Then he catches himself, because there are wild animals in his kitchen, and Jim is talking to them. What's going on? He demands. He wants to be furious, but he's really too bewildered to properly manage it, so it comes out much closer to a protesting squawk. Good morning, Leonard, Jim beams at him sunnily. My friends and I have been cleaning, and I made breakfast. Leonard looks around, and yeah, the kitchen and living area are gleaming. The detritus of too many meals eaten in the delivery boxes have disappeared. Joe's toys are all neatly put away in their storage bin in the corner by the couch. This is Pavel, Jim says, and the pigeon who had been sitting close to him bobs its head, like it's nodding to him. He found the bacon for me this morning. Found the bacon? Leonard echoes, mouthing the words, but barely able to make a sound. Dad, can I come out now? Joanna is plaintive. Please? Just a second, honey, Leonard calls back. What's going on, huh? He asks Jim in a whisper. Are you some kind of runaway circus freak or something? I made breakfast, Jim repeats worriedly, blue eyes wide. What's a circus? The worst part is how sincere he is. Leonard decides the man can't be on drugs. He has to be autistic or something. The doorbell rings. Neota! Joe squeals in delight, emerging from the bedroom and hastily undoing the locks to let the woman in. She opens the door and in steps Leonard's best friend in the world. Hey, Joe, Neota greets the little girl in surprise. How come you're not dressed for school yet? Long story, Joe says. Uh-huh. Neota makes an amused sound as she takes the little girl's hand. How about you tell me all about it while we get you dressed? She looks up at Leonard, grinning. Busy morning? Oh, she catches sight of Jim and breaks off, staring. Good morning, m'lady. Jim says politely. I made breakfast. Will you be joining us? Neota hesitates, but a delighted smile is working its way to her lips. Hold that thought, she calls back. Quick, tell me everything, she says to Joe, and then they disappear into the girl's room. The door shuts on uproarious giggles. Oh boy, that can't be a good sign, Leonard mutters.
What is it? Jim asks.
They're talking about us.
Leonard makes a face, scrubbing his hands over his closed eyes. He's been so damn tired these last few weeks. They've been short-staffed at the hospital, and everyone's been pulling longer shifts. I'm bone tired is all. He sits down heavily at the little table in the kitchen, newly set for four. Jim puts a steaming mug of fresh coffee in front of him and forks three golden pancakes onto his plate. Here, says Jim, have some breakfast. Bones, he adds with a grin.
Come, my little friends, as we all sing a happy little working song. Merry little voices, clear and strong. Come and roll your sleeves up, so to speak, and pitch in. Cleaning crud up in the kitchen as we sing along. To rill a cheery tune in the tub as you scrub a stubborn mildew stain. Pluck a hairball from the shower drain to that gay refrain of a happy working song.
Leonard hates to admit it, but Jim's breakfast is probably one of the best meals he's ever had in his life. Nyota and Joe join them after a minute, Joe all dressed up for school, the pair of them exchanging looks and still giggling. With his stomach full and caffeine in his system, however, Leonard is not moved to protest their foolishness. So, where are you from, Jim? Nyota asks, before taking a bite of her own meal. Her eyes widen. Oh, my God, this is amazing! Where did you learn to cook like this? Jim shrugs. My fairy godfathers taught me, he says. Leonard and Nyota exchange a curious look at that, he shrugging slightly as if to say, see? Jim continues obliviously. And I live in the forest, past the meadows of joy and just beyond the valley of contentment. Okay, Nyota says. Is that somewhere around Napa, then? Leonard shoots her a quelling look, which she ignores as usual. Are you visiting friends in the city? Leonard and Joe are my only friends in the city, m'lady, Jim says. I don't know what I'd have done without them, but today is a new day, and I'm sure I'll find Spock soon. We're going to get married. He looks happier than ever, which is saying something. He's my prince, he adds to Nyota, helpfully. She nods, nonplussed. Thank God they repealed Prop 8, she says. What's Prop 8? Joe asks, concentrating on eating her pancakes neatly. Well, you see, some people want to make laws about who can marry who, Leonard explains. Prop 8 was a rule saying men couldn't marry men and women couldn't marry women. That's horrible! To the adult's surprise, Jim looks like he wants to cry. Then he looks angry. Tell me where they are. Spock and I shall set those poltroons on their ears. What's a poltroon? Joe wants to know.
Leonard concentrates on cutting off Jim's tirade. Luckily, a lot of people decided that was stupid and threw the law out, he says. You and your prince can head straight to the courthouse now. Jim sighs with relief. Oh, that would be lovely. But Spock wants to get married in his father's castle. Well, his stepfather's castle, I suppose it is. He looks thoughtful. I haven't met King Nero, but I'm sure he's just a lovely fellow to have raised Spock and all.
I'm sure, Leonard says politely. He doubts anyone named Nero can be terribly pleasant, but he is not going to say that out loud.
Well, we should be going, Nyota says. She turns to Joe. Go get your backpack, sweetie. And got your lunch money? Joe nods as she grabs her things, just as Jim hands her a little bag. I made you lunch, he says, just like Archer and Tucker used to make me.
Let me see that, Leonard says, peering into the bag suspiciously. It appears to hold a sandwich made with golden bread that's still warm and an apple.
Where'd you get the bread?
I baked it this morning, Jim says, looking confused.
Nyota peers into the bag, too, her expression one of naked envy.
You baked?
Would you like a sandwich, too, Lady Nyota? Jim asks politely. I made one for Leonard, too. That won't be a moment.
Could you? Nyota asks in delight, and Jim is already pulling out the loaf of fresh bread.
And, yeah, Leonard just ate, but his stomach growls at the rich, buttery scent. And seconds later, Jim is handing the woman a lunch bag identical to Joe's. If you ever decide to bat for the other team, promise me you'll marry me? I don't understand, Jim says. What about your one true love? Honey, a man who cooks and cleans is true love, Nyota replies with mock seriousness. Tell your Spock he's a damn lucky man. It was genuinely nice to meet you. She means that last bit, though, and she turns to Leonard. I'll pick her up at 3. Bye, you. She kisses his cheek, and Joe jumps up to kiss him as well. Be safe, girls, he tells them, and then they're out the door. Takes Jim to work with him, thinking Mbenga can figure out whatever his problem is. Chapel can make a few phone calls, too. Maybe figure out if there are any missing persons in the area. This is where you work? Jim looks at the UCSF Medical Center in awe. This is amazing! What do you do here?
Cancer research, Leonard says shortly. Pediatrics ward.
He doesn't talk about his work with strangers much. Hey, Jeff! He calls out to his friend. Can you do me a favor?
Yeah, sure, the other man says.
He looks serious.
Got a moment?
Wait here, Leonard instructs Jim, leaving him by the large aquarium they keep in the waiting areas. It's filled with brightly colored fish that never fail to fascinate small children and calm anxious parents. Jim nods, eyes wide as he stares into the water. Mbenga waits for him off to the side.
We lost Kelly Rodriguez last night, he murmurs.
Leonard feels his stomach plummet. Damn it, why wasn't I called? He growls. I could have done something.
No, you couldn't,
Jeff says gently. He squeezes his arm in sympathy. I'm sorry, Leonard. He feels exhausted and that's it, really. Just exhausted.
Damn it, he says again.
Yeah, I know. Jeff and he are both silent for a moment. Then, to his surprise, the other man snorts, lips twitching in amusement. Who's your friend? Leonard turns around and sees Jim animatedly going on about something to two rapt children and their bemused parents. In his Renaissance fair-esque clothing, he stands out like a sore thumb. The mother detaches herself from the others as Jim pulls something out of his pockets, crouching down to the ground and starting to juggle some walnuts, it looks like. Jeff and he both stiffen as the woman approaches them.
Can we help?
Jeff starts, but she interrupts him. Who is he with? She asks. Is it Make-A-Wish? Because he's wonderful.
Leonard says. Yeah, totally, he is, says Jeff.
Yeah,
Leonard echoes. Yes, he is. Yeah.
Oh, that's so lovely, the woman enthuses. Normally Anna's crying her eyes out coming here, but look at her. The little girl is indeed dry-eyed, listening to Jim very seriously as he sits on the ground and demonstrates tossing one of the nuts in the air, catching it with ease. She imitates him, laughing as she catches it. Leonard feels his lips lifting as he watches them, feels something frozen inside start to melt, just a little bit. The mother leaves them, going back to her family. Anna hugs Jim hard, and he looks astonished, then laughs and waves goodbye to them as they head to the nurse's station.
Who is he, Leonard? Jeff asks.
I have no idea, he answers honestly.
Thank you.
The whole of the nursing staff is equally enamored with Jim and his antics, taking turns to keep an eye on him while he sits in the waiting room, telling earnest but amusing fairy tales to wide-eyed children, or teaching them to juggle or other simple games. Mid-shift, Chapel finds Leonard holding her hands, palms up in apology and bewilderment. "He's got no ID, nothing," she says. "Roger called the police just to see, and he doesn't fit the description of any missing persons. And Jeff's talked to him for a while, too. No signs of any abnormality or psychosis. He wondered for a while if it was PTSD or something, and then dismissed that, too. He's a functional adult, it's just that he's a bit..." She pauses, waving her fingers expressively. "He's perfectly nice and no trouble," she adds carefully. "The desk attendants are prepared to give him an award for extraordinary valor, the way he's been helping people all day."
"You've got to be kidding me," Leonard gives her a hard look. "You too? Everyone's falling all over themselves for this guy. Even you're giving me the 'can we keep him?' treatment. You, Chris, what gives?"
"Hey, Bones!" Jim runs up to him, all but bouncing with glee. Leonard nods. "Bones?" in silent confusion, while Chapel looks like she wants to laugh. "Dr. Mbenga said to tell you that it's time for your lunch break. He suggested we go to a place called White Castle. Can we?" Leonard closes his eyes, ignoring the incipient headache that threatens at Jeff's idea of a joke.
"What?" Jim looks confused.
In any event, they do go out to lunch, but to the coffee shop across the street called Common Grounds instead. They've gotten busier since that novel about the place came out, and sometimes non-locals see Leonard's name badge and want to know if that's his real name. It's annoying as hell. They get sandwiches and coffee. Well, Leonard gets coffee, Jim gets a bottle of apple juice. A barista Leonard doesn't recognize offers Jim a free concoction that appears to be made largely of caramel whipped cream. Jim gawks at it. "Oh my, that looks amazing!" He reaches for it, but Leonard pulls him away. "That'll rot your teeth and clog your arteries," he says sternly. "Sorry, I'll..." Leonard reads the name off the man's apron, hoping he said the name right, and leads Jim to the seat by one of the windows instead. "So, tell me about yourself," Leonard continues after a moment. "We really haven't had much time to talk and all." "Well, I'm a woodsman," Jim says with that rambunctious enthusiasm that reminds him of a puppy. "I live in a tree and take care of the forest with my friends." Leonard snorts. "You sound like a character from Fern Gully," he says. The other man blinks in confusion. Sorry, keep going." Jim chatters for a while, describing all the animals of the forest, most of whom talk. Of course. And explaining how his fairy godparents brought him there. "My parents died before I was born," Jim continues sadly, looking more puppy-like than ever. Leonard stares at him.
"That's not even possible," he says. "It's just not."
Jim shrugs. "I assure you it is," he says. "It's what Pike always told me."
"Pike," Leonard echoes. "The... chipmunk?"
"Uh-huh," Jim grins brightly then. "But it all works out, right? I met Spock, and we're gonna get married and live happily ever after."
"Right."
Leonard shrugs mentally, taking a sip of his coffee. Poor sap.
"And, how long have you known this, Spock guy?"
"A day," Jim smiles, the expression blooming over his features like a flower turning to the sun. Leonard refrains from spewing his coffee back out. Barely. Instead, he ends up inhaling some of it, chokes, and coughs roughly.
"A day?" he demands when he can talk again. "A day?"
"Uh-huh." Jim is oblivious to his horror. "And tomorrow it will be 2 days."
"That's insane," Leonard says. "Ridiculous! You can't seriously mean to marry someone after only knowing them a day."
Jim's blue eyes are wide and confused.
"Why not? Relationships just don't work like that."
Leonard can't believe he's having this conversation with a grown man. They just don't. There's dating and getting to know each other and meeting each other's friends and family. All these things, they take time. Jim looks confused. Dates? He echoes. What's a date? Leonard refrains from rolling his eyes, but only just. A date is, you know, where you go out with someone. You talk, you see a movie, share a meal, stuff like that. And after these dates, that's when you get married? Jim looks skeptical. Well, marriage takes lots of work and planning and making sure you're right for each other, Leonard explains. And even then, things don't always work out. He slumps in his chair, feeling tired all over again. Believe me, I know, he mutters. Bones. Leonard. Jim looks sympathetic, licking his bottom lip hesitantly. Where's Joanna's mother? She left us 3 years ago, he says slowly. There were lots of reasons. Reasons why. He stumbles on that. Anyhow, Joe and I moved out here. I already knew Neota from college, and she's been a lifeline for Joe. They do girl stuff together. So we get by okay, you see? He concludes. Jim listens to this, bewilderment, confusion, and sympathy playing over his face in rapt succession. When Leonard is done, he grasps his hand eagerly. Oh, but don't you see, Bones? He says. You just married the wrong person, is all. When you find your real true love and share true love's first kiss. And yeah, the way he says it, the words are all capitalized, hell, illuminated even. Everything will be wonderful. You'll see. What? He asks uncertainly as Leonard continues to stare at the man. How do you do that? He asks. You're just so damn certain that things are going to work out all the time. How can you be that hopeful in the world that we live in? Oh, Bones, Jim says fondly, and with such clear affection that Leonard can't even tell him to stop calling him by that ridiculous nickname he seems to have acquired. I know the world seems like a hard place, and sometimes it is, but honestly, there's just so much wonderful about it, too. You can't block out everything just to protect yourself from maybes. Is that what you think I'm doing? Blocking everything out? I'm certain of it, Jim says, with as much seriousness as Leonard has yet seen. Don't do that to yourself, or to Joe either. Leonard doesn't answer immediately, just stares at their joined hands. Jim pulls his back with a slightly panicked expression, as if he'd been burned. They leave the shop then and return to the hospital. Leonard's shift ends at 4 that afternoon, so the rest of the day is a blur as he goes in and out of patients' rooms, checking in with kids and their parents. When the day is over, he's in an even darker mood than he was before, and in fact, he's almost forgotten Jim, who waits patiently for him in the waiting room. Bones! The man calls out when he sees him. Leonard exhales heavily. All he wants to do is go home, not deal with misplaced woodsmen or whatever. Oh, good, you're still here, he mutters. If Jim hears or understands his sarcasm, he gives no sign of it, bright smile remaining firmly in place. I heard about the most wonderful place, he says with his usual, almost childlike enthusiasm. Let's go. That's how they find themselves in Golden Gate Park. That's how, fairly inexplicably, Leonard McCoy finds himself standing in the middle of a perfectly choreographed dance sequence, complete with background chorus and orchestration, as Jim eagerly expresses his belief in true love in song. If Leonard nods his head in time to the music, it's only because it's been a very, very long day. "Oh, look," Jim says, pointing to a sign advertising a fantasy ball the next night. "That sounds wonderful. You should take Neota." Leonard makes a thoughtful sound. He does owe her dearly, and she does love dancing.
"Maybe," he says.
Jim looks deeply pleased, almost smug, as they head home after that.
"I just worry is all," Leonard explains at night at dinner. They're at an Italian place near his apartment in North Beach, a Neapolitan pizzeria called Bellissimo's. Neota and Joe are helping Signora Molina to make tomorrow's batch of gnocchi, and Leonard is on his second glass of wine and feeling sleepy and talking more than he usually does about things he tries not to talk about.
"About Joe?" Jim grins at the little girl. "She's a great kid, Bones."
I want her to be strong, is all," Leonard says wistfully. "She's so sweet, and the world is so... not."
"Don't say that, Bones. You should have more faith."
"Uh-huh. I guess."
Leonard feels remarkably relaxed now, which is weird, because he's having dinner with a guy he swore was a drug addict or something the night before. He feels a little chuckle bubble up out of him, because, really... it doesn't stand to reason that a man as innocent as Jim is should even be surviving here. And yet, he was.
Jim glances back at him, frowning a little. His forehead is wrinkled very seriously in thought, and Leonard feels his lips twitch upward in response.
Jim's eyes widen almost comically at that.
"Bones," he says very seriously. "We've had coffee, and we're at a restaurant right now. Is this a date?"
Leonard almost chokes on his bite of pizza.
"No,"
he says immediately. Jim looks taken aback.
No, he says more calmly. Friends can have coffee and meals out too, and all."
"Oh." Jim's expression looks odd, almost regretful even. But then Joanna laughs at something Neota has said, and he's grinning at them, and that whole sad look may well have been Leonard's imagination.
"So," Leonard starts to say instead, but suddenly there's a scream from somewhere behind him, and a small furry creature has leapt onto their table.
"Pike!" Jim is delighted. "Where have you been?"
The waiter, who looks strangely familiar and who has an odd, elaborate mustache that has to be fake, is bounding over with a broom, aiming furiously for the chipmunk.
"I'll get you, you little—" he growls,
plates and glasses tossed and shattered in disarray as he tries to get to the creature. Leonard pulls Joe up out of harm's way, holding her face protectively to his chest. Jim looks like he wants to start a fight, body tense and bristling, but Neota is pulling him back gently.
"Daddy, what happened to the pizza?"
Joe mumbles against his chest. The surface of the pizza is moving unnaturally.
"Pike!"
Jim cries.
"Aha!"
says the waiter, flinging the pizza into the oven. An impressive flame bursts forth, then disappears. The air smells like heat and burned cheese, and there's applause from the other customers, and Jim looks crushed. Reporters appear shortly afterwards. "No rodent remains were found," a woman says very seriously to the camera, and Jim perks up.
"How do you feel about this, sir?"
She sticks a microphone in his face.
"Wonderful," Jim declares, to the woman's horror.
"Pike is very smart," he reassures Joanna that night. Leonard overhears them as he comes out of the bathroom, freshly showered and in his pajamas.
"Yeah?"
She sits on her bed, Mr. Bear at her side. "I hope he's okay."
"I'm sure he is," Jim beams at her.
He's gotten me out of a tight spot or two. I'm sure he's fine. When his daughter is safely asleep, Leonard shakes his head at the younger man.
You should be careful about things like that, he says. False hope is a difficult thing for kids.
To his surprise, Jim's blue eyes glint ferociously.
Hope isn't false, Leonard, he says, glaring. What is with you all the time? No hope, no faith, nothing. You make me so...
He's worked himself up, agitated to the point of being unable to finish his sentence.
Angry?
Leonard suggests dryly.
Angry! Jim concludes. Oh!
He looks gobsmacked. Sounding dazed, he echoes, I'm angry. He flushes then, and abruptly the room feels a few degrees too warm, and Leonard's pajamas feel thin. The damp cloth clings to his body, and Jim seems fixated on his exposed chest, the spot right over his heart. They're both silent, and then Leonard finally wills himself to get the hell out of there before... just before.
Good night, Jim.
Leonard wakes to the scent of coffee and something that smells mouth-wateringly like cinnamon rolls. Sometime, he's going to ask Jim where he learned to cook like that, but as it is, he's stretching leisurely before getting out of bed, wrapping his old bathrobe around himself as he heads to the kitchen. Joe is already sitting at the table, a tall glass of milk and a pastry on her plate. They're hot cross buns, Jim is explaining to Joe, who takes a happy bite out of said bun. It's yummy, she says contentedly. On most days, Leonard would probably have had something to say about sugar consumption right about now, but it's Saturday, so he lets it pass. He sits down next to Joe, and Jim puts a cup of coffee and a plate in front of him. Thanks, he says, smiling at the other man. Jim beams back as usual, and Leonard tries not to think about how easy it could be getting used to this. He's just taking a sip when there's a knock on the door, and the three of them look at one another in confusion. I'll get it, Jim says immediately, and he's up and opening the door, and then all of a sudden a tall, thin man with pointed ears leaps into the room.
Jim!
He cries.
Spock!
Jim looks gobsmacked.
What are you doing here?
Saving you, Spock answers. He thrusts the tip of his sword beneath Leonard's chin. Shocked, Leonard hears himself say with surprising calm,
Joe, run to your room. Now.
Daddy! Joe's voice shakes near tears. Spock, no! Jim puts himself between the two of them, carefully pushing the blade away with his naked hands. They're friends! The elf looks dubious at that.
Are you certain, my love?
Yeah, Jim says quickly. Totally certain. Completely. There is nothing but certainty here. Spock hesitates for a moment, then sheathes his sword. My apologies, he says formally, making an elaborate bow to Leonard and Joe. He turns to Jim then, a soft smile overtaking his features. And Leonard can hear the distant upswell of a massive orchestra.
I've been dreaming of my true love's kiss. The orchestra peters out.
Spock looks confused.
To finish,
he prompts.
Spock?
Jim stares at the elf, who looks bewildered.
Why aren't you singing, my love?
Jim looks surprised as well. I guess I didn't feel like it, he says uncertainly.
Didn't feel like it?
Spock echoes blankly. This statement irritates Leonard. If he doesn't feel like singing, he doesn't have to, he says. So, you know, there, he concludes, like the mature adult he is. Spock blinks at this statement owlishly before turning to the woodsman in question. Shall we go now, my love? Well, actually... Jim hedges, much to Leonard's surprise. Finally, he blurts, I want us to go out on a date first. Of course, Spock says immediately. Then, what's a date? They say goodbye awkwardly outside the apartment building. Jo looks like she's trying very hard not to cry. You must visit us at the palace, Spock says. We would love to have you, of course. Of course, Jim echoes.
Yeah, Leonard says lamely. Sounds good.
He has no idea where the hell they're going anyway, but whatever. Jim and Spock disappear off to their date, and Yoda appears for their Saturday brunch shortly afterwards. She takes one look at both of them and asks, What happened?
Hey, Yoda, Leonard asks instead. Would you like to go to a ball tonight?
Fantasy ball is at the Westin St. Francis, and Yoda procures splendid Regency-style outfits for the both of them.
I look ridiculous, he grumbles,
pulling awkwardly at the tight breeches. You look fabulous, she corrects. They blend perfectly with the array of dancers in the ballroom. Yoda is a splendid dancer, and he doesn't do so badly himself.
How come you and I never got together?
He asks after their first dance. Yoda laughs softly at that. Because I'm a romantic and you're not, she says. And because you haven't looked at a woman that way since Jocelyn Darnell. Leonard grunts. What's that supposed to? He breaks off, because he happens to look up, and there are Jim and Spock. Jim is resplendent in an ivory shirt with a blue and gold waistcoat and brown leather breeches. Spock wears his clothing from earlier, a red and gold outfit that looks more than a little bit cartoon-like. Jim grins at him, but it looks faded somehow. Hey, the woodsman says.
Hi.
Leonard just stares at him. We haven't been introduced, Yoda says carefully, eyeing the pair of them. She turns to Spock. My name is Yoda. Spock bows, kissing her hand.
My lady, he says.
It is a pleasure to make your beauteous acquaintance.
Oh,
Neota's skin darkens in surprised pleasure. Thank you.
Well, folks, it's that time of night, announces the MC. I'd like to invite each of you to ask someone you did not bring this evening to dance the King and Queen Waltz.
The four of them exchange awkward looks.
My lady,
Spock asks Neota, holding out his arm invitingly. She nods, and he escorts her to the dance floor as a slow ballad plays. Jim and Leonard stand back in the shadows, then Leonard takes a deep breath.
Shall we?
He asks. Jim nods, and they too join the pairs moving gracefully to the music. Normally, he hates dancing, but Jim's body moves with his, and the music swells around them, and everything seems easy somehow. Leonard finds himself singing quietly along to the lyrics, and Jim's eyes are wide and blue, and all too soon the song is ending. "May I cut in?" Spock asks, Nyota looking on in puzzlement.
"Of course," Leonard says automatically.
"We should go." Leonard stares at Jim, who doesn't meet his eyes, and who shifts uncomfortably.
"Now."
Spock looks confused as well.
"Of course, my love," he agrees softly. "I'll get your coat."
Leonard watches the other two men walk away.
"Come on, Leonard," Nyota says gently, and he lets himself be pulled back into the crowd. He's vaguely aware of thunder, as if a distant storm is building outside. And then there's a scream, and he sees Jim fall.